the drum beat against me as someone who wants Obama to fail personally. I hope, especially with what we've seen now, I hope he fails in implementing all this. To me, this is a no-brainer. We want something to blow up here. This is not just mortgaging the future. This is a full-fledged attack on capitalism. This is a reordering and a transformation of the basic free market. We're talking about freedom that is under assault.
This Week in Radical History for the week of March 2nd. Inspiration for this piece came from the Slingshot organizer, and more radical info can be found at the People's Calendar at the Daily Bleed website.
There is something going on in the ether.
The kids are now moving back into the street.
For every Martin they cut down, there must be 100 Martins to step into his shoes.
This Week in Radical History for March 2nd, 1877. Despite an apparent Democratic victory at the polls, the Electoral College, swayed by Republican bribery, selects Rufford B. Hayes, a Republican, as president. Supporters of Democratic Tilghman rightfully claim a stolen election. Real Bush League stuff. Also on March 2, 1899, Congress allows railroad companies blanket approval of right-of-way through all Native American lands. Without compensation, of course. Also on March 2, 1917, in Puerto Rico, U.S. President Wilson thwarts Puerto Rican independence, takes over the island, and controls its economy and fiscal aspects of the government. Wilson also signs a compulsory military service act into law, and 20,000 islanders are drafted into World War I. Welcome to America. In 1930, Gandhi begins his 200-mile march to protest the salt tax. Also on this day in radical history for 1942, acting under Executive Order 9066, General DeWitt proclaims all Japanese Americans will be required to move away from the West Coast and recommends for, quote, their own good, unquote, they should do so voluntarily. Only a small portion do so, so later this month they will make it mandatory. Also on this date, 1982, Philip K. Dick dies, American science fiction dystopia writer. He once said, "The basic tool of all manipulation of reality is the manipulation of words. If you can control the meaning of words, you can control the people who must use the words."
From where Winston stood, it was possible to read, picked out on his white face in elegant lettering, the three slogans of the party. War is peace. Freedom is slavery. Ignorance is strength.
And when we talk about war, we're really talking about peace.
War is peace. Freedom is slavery. Ignorance is strength.
This is your Radio Roots reporter, Arturo Contreras. On this day, March 3rd in 1863, Congress passed the first draft law in United States history, authorizing the president to draft citizens into the Civil War. While most of the North supported the Union, the shortage of men enlisting in the military, especially in New York City, is what sparked this law. One of the provisions of the draft law allowed a man to exempt himself from being drafted in exchange for $300. This was controversial because $300 in 1863 was a sum of money that only rich people could afford, and the war quickly became known among the middle and lower classes as the rich man's war and the poor man's fight. Soon after this legislation passed, rioting spread angrily through New York City in a violent expression of displeasure with the law. Yeah, I said it. This is your free speech educator reminding you, say it, the past, slip away.
Also on March 3rd, 1871, the Senate decides it will no longer contract treaties with Native American nations. Congress calls all Native Americans wards of the state and nullifies all standing treaties. Also on March 3rd, 1873, Comstock Act makes it illegal to send obscene or lewd books or birth control information through the U.S. mail. Also on this date in 1919, a ruling on the conviction of anarchists Emma Goldman and Alexander Berkman, the Supreme Court upholds the Espionage Act. Goldman and Berkman were arrested during World War I for a so-called conspiracy against the draft. Today's court ruling thus puts draft resistance outside First Amendment protection. Emma Goldman's last act before entering prison is to organize a political prisoners' amnesty league. During the war, thousands of deserters have been sentenced to long prison terms. At Eagle Island, a concentration camp for deserters, many of them were systematically tortured. At the federal prison in Leavenworth, Kansas, prisoners have been hung by their wrists for up to weeks at a time. Take that, you peace-loving Quakers. Also on March 3rd, 1961, Village Council in Inuit town of Point Hope in a far northwestern Alaska objects by letter to President John F. Kennedy to a chain explosion of 5 atomic bombs in nearby above-ground Project Chariot test, to no avail. Also on this date in 1983, Acting President Ronald Reagan calls for a week of reporting only good news. Also on this date in 1989, Rodney King is savagely beaten by LA cops on this date, and it is all videotaped. Despite the video evidence, a nearly all-white jury will not convict the cops.
Seems so definitive. Why did the jury see the beating of Rodney King in such a vastly different light? Here's ABC's Judy Muller.
It was never even close. On the very first day of deliberations, a straw vote made it clear that a majority of the jurors favored acquittal. How could that be, given the powerful evidence of the videotape? Two jurors talked to ABC News today by phone.
These officers have a job to do, and in doing that job, they have to be given a certain amount of reasonable, and that's what this is, you know, reasonable force.
Several jurors say they were persuaded by the defense argument that the videotape did not tell the whole story and that Rodney King represented a threat to the officers. The jurors were convinced that it was King who controlled the action, that he could have stopped the beating by surrendering. The officers, they felt, used reasonable force.
The jury was made up of 10 whites, one Hispanic, and one Asian. Critics of the verdict are questioning whether this jury of their peers gave the white defendants an edge and whether King's race was a factor.
What human being wouldn't be influenced by this? You know, this is ridiculous. This is chaos right now, and I can't help but feel somewhat responsible.
And yet, he says, if he had to do it again, he would vote the same way.
And justice for all. This week in radical history, from March 4th, 1912, in England, suffragettes walk in single file in Kingsbridge, London, smashing every window they pass to protest government inaction. This week in radical history, from March 5th, 1917, Wobblies, Industrial Workers of the World, also known as IWW, go on trial in Everett, Washington. The labor agitators were gunned down by government-sanctioned mob, sheriff-led vigilantes. Like most cases of labor strife, the government, big business, police, military, and media are aligned against the unionists. Also on March 5th, 1983, can't see the forest from the trees. Acting President Ronald Reagan visits Klamath County, Oregon. Reagan says, quote,
"Well, there is today in the U.S. as much forest as there was when Washington was at Valley Forge."
A lie, of course. Actually, there is less than one-third. This week in radical history, from March 6, 1930, 100,000 demonstrate for jobs in New York City. Demonstrations by unemployed workers demanding unemployment insurance occur in a variety of major cities throughout the country. Police attack a crowd of 35,000 in New York City, and 10,000 people engage in melee with police in Cleveland. While 35,000 jobless workers march down Woodward in national protest against unemployment and hunger. Thousands join together and walk to the Ford Motor Company's employment office in Dearborn. Henry Ford, whose plant had laid off more than one-third of its employees, declared that, quote, "who wanted a job could find one," unquote. The marchers attend to take old Henry up on a statement. Violence erupts between the unemployed and police who join Ford's security forces. Shots are fired into the crowd, killing four protesters. Republican Congressman Hamilton Fish, with the support of the American Federation of Labor, AFL, also introduces a measure to Congress to create a committee to investigate radical activities. This would become the House Un-American Activities Committee. Have you driven a Ford out of town lately? Also on March 6, 1965, civil rights demonstrations begin a march from Selma to Montgomery to protest the murder of Jamie Lee Jackson and to demand voting rights for blacks. They are brutally beaten by police officers while crossing the bridge in Selma. 67 are injured. The attack become known as Bloody Sunday. Lastly, on March 6, 1974, the Weatherman Underground bombed the Department of Health in San Francisco to protest forced sterilization of poor women. This week in radical history, from March 7th, John Fry's Rebellion, also known as the House Tax Rebellion, an armed tax revolt led by a Pennsylvania farmer, began in 1799 and ran through 1800. It would be suppressed by the government, and Fry's and two others sentenced to hang, later pardoned by the president. Also on March 7th, 1921, Trotsky orders the artillery bombing of Kronstadt, entrenching the Bolshevik power and stopping any real chance of real reform in Russia. Emma Goldman and Alexander Berkman, feeling that their last tie to the Bolsheviks had been broken, decide to leave Russia and alert the world to what they have witnessed. Two more items for March 7th, 1942. IWW founder, anarchist labor organizer Lucely Parsons dies. She's described by Chicago Police Department once as more dangerous than 1,000 rioters. Lucely Parsons. Also in 1998, anarchist Jack Frager dies in New York. He is last arrested at age 88 during the Hiroshima Day protest for painting shadows of bomb victims on sidewalks in New York City. This week in radical history for March 8, 1906. In the Philippines, U.S. occupations massacre an unruly band, mowing stubborn tribes people down with a combination of artillery fire and infantry assault. Men, women, and children are all slaughtered. Afterwards, President Roosevelt congratulates these brave Americans for, quote, a brilliant feat of arms within you, which upholds the honor of the American flag. Also on March 8, 1917, Cuba, U.S. invades Cuba for the fourth time. Also on this date in 1964, the first invasion of Alcatraz by Dakota Sioux, who claimed the island under the 1868 Sioux Treaty to remind America of the offer of government of $6.54 for the land, based on 49 cents per square acre, which is being considered proposed to be given for compensation for tribal Indian land stolen from California indigenous peoples. Yep, $6.54 for Alcatraz Island. Lastly, for March 8, 1971, 1,000 documents are stolen from the FBI office in Pennsylvania, later distributed in newspapers. Members of the Citizen Committee to Investigate the FBI, an arm of the Weathermen Underground, break into FBI offices revealing the existence of FBI's criminal COINTELPRO program, harassing domestic political dissidents. Here's a short segment about that from the documentary about the Weather Underground and COINTELPRO.
So there was a lot of outlaw culture. Because of the way that this country is falling apart, more and more young people are living in communal situations. More and more young people are beginning to fight the government on various levels. And so there's a huge mass of people that people who are underground fugitives can move amongst and have protection from and be with.
The weathermen were extremely bright. Many of them had access to fairly substantial amounts of money, which is the key to staying underground. We didn't get them, but we came close. It was frustrating when you wanted to catch these people as much as we did. You weren't going to catch these people in the standard FBI approach of surveilling the house the night before grandma's 50th wedding anniversary. So the fugitive comes walking in with a gift. Bang, you got him. It wasn't going to work that way. The way that we decided to do was to basically go underground and essentially the same way they did, and use some investigative techniques which were very tried and true in the National Security Division.
They did break into people's apartments and steal things, did try to plant divisive stories among people who were working in the peace movement and the anti-war movement. And I had a whole strategy that included beating people up and dangling people out of windows. And, you know, it was not just light.
I know people who have liberal political tendencies would say it's terrible. People who don't would say that, you know, if you're not doing anything wrong, nothing wrong is going to happen, nothing bad is going to happen to you.
In the early 1970s, a group of radicals calling itself the Citizens Commission to Investigate the FBI broke into an FBI field office in Media, Pennsylvania, and made off with several boxes of files. The documents, which were leaked anonymously to the press, revealed the existence of COINTELPRO, a secret FBI program to destroy a wide range of groups that opposed the U.S. government. The Black Panthers, the anti-war movement, even Martin Luther King. By the early 1970s, COINTELPRO had been largely effective.
The movement began to devour itself. There was the absence of all the things that made the movement so powerful. Absence of trust, absence of love, absence of a sense of humor, absence of commitment, absence of this communal, we're all in this together. All that stuff seemed to have been blown apart.
Don't let this happen to you.
Mother Earth says, now take good care of me. Please do not hurt me. Hey-o. Hey-o, hey-o, hey-o. And Father Sky says, now take good care of me, please do not hurt me. Hey, hey, oh, hey, oh, Ohio, and all living creatures say, take good care of us, please do not hurt us. Hey, hey, oh, hey, oh, hey, oh, hey, oh. And we are here to be ourselves, to be with one another, to be with our surroundings, to be. Ourselves, to take care of one another, to take care of our surroundings, take care, to care. We are here to love ourselves, to love one another, to love our surroundings, to love.
This has been This Week in Radical History, produced at the Mobile Fortress of Glee Glee Studios. Inspiration for this segment came from the Slingshot Organizer. Most of the radical info for the show came from the People's Calendar at the Daily Bleed website. Some audio for this week's show was borrowed from the Radio Roots crew at WBAI in New York, and any music was from the great weekly Indigenous Voices program produced at Wolf Mountain Radio. Thanks for tuning in this week's show, and as always, and forever, I'm yours in a struggle, Mike Cannon. Thank you.